Hi everyone, I'm Kay Jabelli.
I'm Frieza Bastoon, and this is Monopoly Attack. Now, this episode is a bit different than the usual ones. We're collecting insights from perhaps the most important and certainly the most fun competition law conference of the year, ASCOLA. We won't just look at the substance of what was discussed, but also try to give you a sense of what it means to be a competition law academic with the help of some guests. ASCOLA stands for the Academic Society for Competition Law. It is the place to showcase your competition law scholarship, and it just held its 17th annual conference, which took place in Porto, Portugal, at the end of June 2022. Now, the conference is a big one. There were 100 papers picked on a peer review basis from a much larger number of submissions, and those were presented over 29 panels. The explicit topic was competition and innovation in digital markets, but there was so much more. One thing that was definitely noticeable was the amount of panels and papers on sustainability as it relates to horizontal agreements, vertical agreements, even abuse of dominance and merger control. So that certainly piqued people's interest. Some of it related to more specific developments, with Google Shopping taking the crown there. But a lot of it really went to the more fundamental notions, such as, you know, what does an abuse of dominance mean? Stavros Makris, my co-panelist, had a lot of interesting things to say about that, putting forward two different conceptions, one centered around consumer welfare, the other around meritorious rivalry. And there were also some non-legal panels dealing with questions about mentoring or how not to present a paper. Now, Kay, how did you experience this whole event?
I thought it was amazing. It was my first time, and I've been to a lot of other kinds of conferences, but the ones that are more professional, so to say, less academic, they tend to be a lot about sort of point scoring or what already happened, and not really as collaborative, as collegial, as exploratory, as experimental as this one was. I mean, the degree of high quality substantive discussion that was taking place, the theoretical work that was done and being presented, it was fantastic. And being with a bunch of people who really are passionate about competition law, think about it a lot, and are eager to chat about it with other like-minded colleagues, it felt more like a college dorm room than a college classroom, and I really enjoyed it.
That's a nice way to put it. And one of the many people to thank for that constructive and collegial atmosphere you're talking about is Magali Eben. You sat down with her during a coffee break?
I did. Let's hear what she had to say to young scholars interested in competition law.
Dr. Magali Eben is a lecturer at the University of Glasgow School of Law and co-director of the ASCOLA UK chapter. She holds a bachelor and master's degree in law from the Vrije Universiteit of Brussels in Belgium, and an LLM from the University of Leeds, where she also did her PhD thesis entitled Addressing the Main Hurdles of Product Market Definition for Online Services, Products, Price, and Dynamic Competition. Dr. Eben, what can younger scholars and those interested in competition law and policy do early on in their careers to help lay the foundation for long-term success?
So I guess it's about getting to know competition law people and all the different institutions. The competition law world is small. It's really, really small. And when you start to think that it's full of these really amazing, impressive people, and they are, they're amazing and impressive, but also they will quickly become your friends. Now, the flip side of this is that you should also be kind, because I think the death sentence for any career is if from the first moment you are coming across as a bit arrogant, and that can be because you're just not confident. So just be confident, be kind, make sure to reach out to people. Most people will say yes if you ask them a question or you ask them advice. But you have to take the initiative because everybody is way too busy. So you reach out and get to know everybody.
I think there's been a lot of really amazing people here, luminaries of the field, and I've just been surprised and impressed and for how much it's been reaffirmed that this community, while small, is very close and friendly and open if you come with same kind of energy.
Yeah, definitely. And people do disagree with each other, right? But they can disagree in a panel and then go for a drink in the afternoon and be totally nice about it. So that's nice. I've had experiences of other academic fields, and we're not going to talk about which academic fields, where people can be quite mean and then in the panels and then take that energy to the social events. Or not, we're nice, right?
I'm looking forward to going and singing some karaoke later as well.
Yes, yes, karaoke, definitely. Definitely.
Speaking of young scholars, Francesco Ducci had a very interesting paper which won the Best Junior Paper Award. You had a chance to discuss it with him.
I certainly did. Let's have a listen. Dr. Francesco Ducci is assistant professor at the University of Western Ontario. He completed his PhD at the University of Toronto, and his research there led to a book I can hardly recommend, namely Natural Monopolies in Digital Platform Markets, published with Cambridge University Press. Prior to joining the University of Western Ontario, he was a Hauser Global Fellow at New York University and a Max Weber Fellow at the European University Institute. Now, Francesco, you just won the Ascola Best Junior Paper Award for your paper titled Randomization as an Antitrust Remedy. It's a very interesting paper. Now, can you give us some insights into the problems that motivated this research and the solutions you propose in the paper?
Hello, Frizo. Thank you so much for the invitation. So the paper was motivated basically by a growing belief that one of the major challenges that we see in the enforcement of antitrust in the digital space has to do with the lack of effective remedy design. And I believe that keeps being real as we see some of the recent regulatory proposals that seem to borrow from antitrust cases and transforming remedies into ex ante obligations without a proper explanation about design and effectiveness. This was my motivation, and I also participated at a workshop in 2021 organized by the University of Tilburg. And in the panel, each of the presenters were asked to propose a radical remedy, thinking a little bit of outside of the box in terms of remedy design. And so the idea of this paper really comes from this workshop. So what is the idea of the paper? The idea of the paper is when we think about two types of intervention. One is this idea of non-discriminatory access obligation for platforms and remedy design for in leveraging cases. We could think about a way to design remedies or obligations using some form of randomization. And the main premise for this idea is something that is usually not recognized in the literature, which is the fact that inputs such as rankings provided by platforms, which have been the focus of discussions and cases, are actually non-rivalrous and more shareable than is usually assumed in the literature. And so from this idea that platform ranking have this shareability potential, the paper develops a framework where we could exploit the shareability by, for example, randomizing results. The paper applies this framework into context of non-discriminatory access obligations and remedy design in cases that have to do with sub-preference or pre-installation, trying to push a little bit the logic of design to see where, if there are interesting ideas.
Hmm. Right, yeah, I can definitely see that your proposed remedies is quite radical, this randomization. Then again, that problem it targets is also serious. I mean, while scholars can disagree about the exact theories of harm, there's a sort of consensus that the remedies have at least not attained their stated goal, so it is time for some more radical ideas. Could you perhaps give a bit of a practical example of how your randomization remedy would work in the real world? One potential case study maybe is the Microsoft cases, which we talked about in some previous episodes, that didn't exactly reach their stated goal. They have been of help there.
So when we look at access, for example, the main logic is that suppose you have a platform that provides you with a list of rankings. The usual assumption is that these rankings are limited in space in any number. There is only a given number of rankings that can be allocated to different options. And the basic idea of the paper is that this argument is not complete because it only looks at the perspective of an individual, for example, searcher or user. Whereas we have to look at the supply side from the perspective of the merchant, the advertiser, or the vertical provider, which is usually a perspective that looks at the total number of relevant queries in order to define the scarcity of rankings. When we look at sort of remedy design in exposed enforcement, the idea basically is an augmented version of a choice screen ballot that has been applied in some cases, at least in Europe. And the idea would be to extend the logic of choice screens, which provide a list of options that are usually assigned in random order, to basically expand the number of options and exploit the logic of randomization to nudge users in order to increase switching even more. And I would recommend looking at another paper that was presented in the same panel by Omar Vasquez Duke, who provided us with an empirical study of choice screens. And he suggests that randomization, especially when you randomly assign, for example, a browser or a search engine that meets a minimum level of quality, might be a good way to encourage switching. And so the paper is trying to think a little bit more carefully about the design of these choice screens and understanding whether there can be more could be done by better design.
That was really interesting. I can't wait to read the paper. We'll put a link in the show notes. You also got the chance to catch up with Professor Ruprecht Potsun, didn't you?
Yes, we had a good chat on what makes EU competition law so interesting and exciting these days. Ruprecht Potsun is professor and chair of civil law, German and European competition law at Heinrich Heine University, Düsseldorf, and is director of the Institute for Antitrust Law. He's also one of the co-founders of the Descartes blog, if I may say, the most important window for the English-speaking antitrust world for insights into German antitrust law, and more than that. Professor Potsun is also on the organizing committee for the ESCOLA 2022 conference. Now, the main topic of the ESCOLA conference this year is competition, innovation, digital markets. The European Union recently passed the Digital Markets Act. Germany last year passed its own amendments to its Competition Act to address similar concerns about large digital players. So, Ruprecht, what makes Europe such an interesting place to work on competition law and policy in the digital sector?
What's stunning about Europe is that it is a sort of field of experimentation with different actors, different member states. You have the European level, you have the national level, you have actors like the European Commission, courts, the national agencies like the Bundeskartellamt or the Autorité de la Concurrence. So, and all this sort of makes it a perfect place to try things and to see different developments in a very sort of closed area or an area that is close with many links to one another. And obviously you have a flourishing political and also scholarly debate with very different influences. So you have the more economics oriented Anglo-Saxon tradition, you have the more ordo-liberal German tradition. Other countries have other traditions that they build on, and that sort of all comes together, culminates in Brussels and makes it interesting to work in antitrust. And now with the digital markets, obviously Europe is in a bit of a disarray because we haven't managed really to have huge digital players. The developments, the innovation is basically done in the United States or maybe even China and other countries, which is different from times before when European firms were actually the key industry leaders. And that is interesting to see how we react on that in policy terms. So what happens now? And that has thrown antitrust law, I think, really in problems. And whenever there are problems, whenever we see we don't really know how to react, that's the time of the academics, because they have to systemize that, they have to bring order to that, they have to come up with new policies. And that's currently happening and happening under these very interesting ideas of, on the one hand, being sort of having strong traditions in enforcing antitrust in an environment with key industry leaders. Now this changes to an antitrust world where the key industry leaders are placed elsewhere. And I think that is something that we have to grapple with, and that makes competition law and competition law scholarship so interesting.
Now, Kay, academics have a way with words, but one academic is especially renowned for his rhyming ability. You talked to Philip Marson about the importance of antitrust policy and how it shapes the world we live in.
I did indeed. Let's dive in.
Professor Philip Marsden is professor of law and economics at the College of Europe, Bruges. He was co-author of Unlocking Digital Competition, the report of the UK's Digital Competition Expert Panel. He's an advisor to a variety of international organizations, including the World Bank, OECD, ICN, and previously worked at the UK Antitrust Enforcement Agency. Last night, you performed an antitrust rap, and it wasn't your first time either. It was exciting and funny and certainly engages the interest of people who might not be focused solely on antitrust. Why is antitrust law and policy important and relevant for people today? And why should they care?
So even though competition law itself is quite dry, it's economics based, the consumers themselves may not know about it. And we've found in the UK, rare if companies know about the subject. But the mystique behind it, in a sense, is we're actually doing this for all of us. We're doing competition law for all of us, whether we're competition lawyers, whether we're advisors, officials, or academics. We're contributing to a better market framework law so that the market can work better and the companies can work more fairly and then more innovatively and more efficiently. And so it's something where you don't need to really know the details of the law. I just hope it primarily in most areas stays as something where we let the companies act and provide their best products as quickly and as well as they can. But competition law is there as a sort of a guardrail to make sure that if anything goes wrong, we can step in and correct it so the competition law merits flourishes. There's a slight difference with respect to regulation. And in tech, you know that we're looking at various regulatory models that will be more interventionist, and we call them ex-ante regulation. But again, to my mind, it's the same thing. We're setting out certain rules of fair play, so to speak, however you define that. And then we hope that the companies will then flourish and provide those kinds of choices, economic diversity, innovation, those kinds of things, as opposed to prescribing what products or prices we want. So that's the way I think of competition law. And I hope that an average consumer may never come across the law itself, but they come across this dynamic and they'll say, oh, I understand why there are two providers in that area, but they're competing hardly, you know, heavily. Or, you know, sometimes they wrongly may say, why are cinema tickets the same everywhere or airline tickets the same everywhere? Well, it can be because of the results of competition. And so you need to understand where has there been a competitive effect? Where has there been something that is beneficial to you? And where is it something that is just we just let the market operate and it comes up with the best and fairest and most efficient result.
I mean, as consumers, it really just touches upon everything we do. But then as employees or workers, as participants in society, the whole economic side of our lives is guaranteed and protected by these laws.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's motivating a lot of the digital gatekeeper regulations, which are based on competition law in a certain way, is this idea that not just us as consumers, but also intermediaries and other companies are dependent on other big platforms, say Google or Amazon. And that dependency is built up because we like the products. We use them, they're good, we get more and more dependent on them. But when, you know, whenever you're in a dependent relationship, you're taking a chance. You know, you're not gonna have much choice, much influence. And what we usually prefer in a market economy that's working very fairly is that you as a consumer or as an intermediary or as a buyer or a seller would have some influence in some way, some actual, you know, lack of dependence. You'd be able to, you know, dictate some terms and have an ongoing relationship, a bartering sort of relationship in some ways, or at least thousands of you together deciding not to shop on a certain site or whatever would have an influence. What we're seeing in these gatekeeper markets is that dependency that we have is so strong, whether it's us or whether it's intermediaries, that the large firms can largely dictate the terms to us. And there may be a range of efficiencies and innovative results from that. But what I prefer to think of is I'd like to be sure that what is being offered to us is as a result of the best offer of the company, not just, oh, this seems convenient to us, and so we'll roll this out.
It is more than just economics. Indeed, there's elements of fairness and freedom and liberty as well.
Yeah, and I think of that in terms of not that fairness is an F word that we don't understand, we can't define. Everyone has a different view of fairness. I agree with that. I've sliced a pie and I've decided who gets the size, the big one and the small one, and I know that's not fair. And so I get that. What I prefer to think of as fairness and is the equality point you made is not that we're going to make markets equal, that everybody has an equal chance to make the same amount of money. It's that they'll have an equal chance to be visible and be able to show their wares, show their products. And if it's any good, they'll attract attention like that, and they'll win on competition on the merits. They might not become dominant or hugely successful, but at least they have an ability to get in. And right now there are some markets where I think it's really quite hard for them for that dynamic to operate. And that's why I think some of this ex-ante regulation in some areas might just open that doorway a little bit, and we'll see what happens.
Well, it looks like there will be a lot more to discuss at next year's Ascola conference. What do you think? Should we do it again?
We definitely should. In fact, I'd say that any competition law scholar from anywhere should.